in the U.S., by the time we're at least in the middle of grade school, we've been taught that there are no stupid questions. The idea, of course, is to try to help us to feel comfortable asking for help. When James and John, the sons of Zebedee, ask Jesus if they can sit at his right hand and one at his left hand in his glory, they show us that our grade school teachers were just being kind. There are bad questions. Can you imagine? Jesus has just told his disciples for the third time that he's going to suffer, die, and rise. He has just been so deeply vulnerable with them, sharing his future humiliation and suffering. And then James and John ask their question as if he had just told them that he was going out to the store to get some milk. They're somewhere between ignorant and unobservant. And once again, I'm amazed that Jesus does not respond with frustration, but rather as the wise teacher. He steps back, readjusts his tactics, and instead of answering their request directly, he tries to help them understand the folly of their question without making them look the fool. He says, "Can you drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" Let's unpack that a little bit. To drink the cup that I drink has a very rich, robust meaning in Jewish culture. Throughout the scriptures, to drink this cup means to accept one's fate. Most memorably, in the Garden of Gethsemane, when Jesus prays, "Father, if it be thy will, let this cup pass from me. Let my fate be something different." So when Jesus asks James and John, "Can you drink the cup that I drink?" he's asking them, "Can you align yourself with the same fate that I am going to have?" This, my friends, this is the turn the world upside down logic of following Jesus. We are seeking seats of power and prestige next to Jesus in his place of glory. And he's trying to teach us that the centerpiece of ministry is to overturn the notions of prestige and power and glory as this world understands them. As Reverend Kate Matthews, the Dean of Amistad Chapel at the United Church of Christ's national office in Cleveland puts it, "The Zebedee brothers think the systems are good, but that the wrong people are in the places of honor. Once they come into their own alongside Jesus, they think that everything will be fixed from top down." What Jesus tries to teach them is that this world's systems of power structures are really what's to blame. In fact, he is going to suffer and die because of the corruption of human power systems, because of human greed and pride and jealousy being enfranchised into the way that our power systems tell us that we are to get ahead. He tells them that following him is going to mean dying. Now, most of us who try to follow Jesus are not going to drink the cup that Dietrich Bonhoeffer or Oscar Romero or Martin Luther King drank. Most of us are not going to literally lose our lives for Jesus. Most of us won't be martyred. But in our gospel today, Marcus Borg does see a kind of dying as a metaphor with two meanings, both of which he believes are at the core of Christian faith. A dying to self as the center of one's concern, and a dying to the world as the center of one's security and identity. That's critical here, so let me say it again. A dying of the self as the center of one's concern, and a dying to the world as the center of security and identity. Here, Borg hits the center of Christianity. We are called to put love of the other instead of our own personal quest for glory. And Jesus constantly tries to help us understand that the glory, the security of this world, that those things that we yearn for and grasp toward so fervently aren't stable either. To quote Robert Frost, nothing gold can stay. Whenever I think of this, I think of a story that I've told many of you. When I was 11 years old, my father had his first major surgery. He had double bypass when I was in sixth grade. I remember standing outside that morning waiting for the school bus to come up over the hill and climbing onto that bus and wondering if I'd have a dad when I got home. It was experiences like that that helped me, by the time I was 13 or 14, come to one of Borg's central realizations, that nothing in this world, not our homes, our jobs, our wealth, our cars, even our family, can be counted on. The only stability that we can find is in the love of God in Christ Jesus. There are really two hinges in today's gospel. In the first, Jesus tells James and John that they need to follow his ways, and even then, giving them seats of honor isn't his to do. Then Jesus addresses the rest of the disciples, saying, you know that those who are regarded as the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as the ransom for many. While James and John are asking to sit at the head table, Jesus is telling them that following him means being the waiter, not the guest of honor. Which brings us back to our stewardship experiment from last week. Just to catch up those of you who weren't with us last week, the gospel passage that we read then was just a few verses before what we read this week. We read then Mark 10, 17 through 31, in which Jesus tells the story of a rich man who would rather walk away from Jesus than sell all of his possessions and follow him. What we talked about last week was that everything that we have, all of creation, is a gift from God. And that therefore we need a mind shift. Instead of spending our time preserving what we have, holding on to what we have, grasping and trying to accumulate more, we need to be spending our time trying to figure out how to make this world a little more like heaven for others. And so, what I did last week is I hid six envelopes in Bibles in your pews around the sanctuary. And in each envelope, there was somewhere between $5 and $50. Partway through the sermon, I asked people to look in the envelopes, look for the envelopes, open them up, see the gift that they had been given, and then start thinking about how they could use that gift to help someone else. Now, I know that these gifts that I offered were not huge, but I wanted to give a handful of people the opportunity to live out what it was that we were talking about. And so I see most of the folks who received envelopes last week are back. Would those of you who were part of the experiment be willing to share what you did with your gifts? We have a microphone already. Would a couple of you be willing to share? Lou is right here.
I hit the jackpot. I got $50 last week, and my benefactor is right here. Claudia Dolger is going to be using that for supplying snacks to Howe School.
Beautiful. Thank you. Howe School is one of the... Our outreach ministry has been helping out Howe School, and we've adopted a classroom at Howe, and so this will be one more way that we're able to help Howe. How about Nick and Dustin? Right behind Lou.
I'll share, and then you can go ahead. I received $5 in my envelope, and this morning when I went to the Y, I passed it on to the front desk to give to someone for Kids Corner for the pay-as-you-go plan, so they can get a little, almost 2 hours of child care in the Kids Corner there at the Y.
So. Beautiful. Thanks.
We got $20 last week, and so we took the $20 and we matched it by 30 and donated $50 to CASA, court-appointed special advocate for children from abusive families. It's an advocate for them, for someone who's going through the long court process, someone who can be held accountable and kind of be their go-to person and help them through it.
Excellent. Thanks.
My story is a little.
Go ahead.
My envelope contained only $5, so what am I going to do with $5? The Boy Scouts solved that problem for me. They left a plastic bag on my front porch with instructions to put canned goods in it and put it on the curb yesterday morning. Well, $5 wasn't quite enough. I added $1.65 of my own money. I now had $6.65. I went to the grocery store, bought 2 cans of corn, 2 cans of peas, and 1 can of lima beans. I put all of these cans in the bag and put them on the curb yesterday morning. Now, probably many people don't like lima beans, but my purpose was that if the family that received the lima beans did not like it, my hope was that in the spirit of Bridget's sermon last week, they would re-gift the lima beans to a family that liked them.
That's great. Thanks, Bob. Kathy?
My story is a little bit more, a little longer. I was reading Shannon Martin's Ministry of Ordinary Things, and she says, you know, the way to do this is just keep your eyes open. So that was my mantra moving forward, keeping my eyes open. I read a blog called Marginal Revolution, and the author of the blog was publishing a book called Stubborn Attachments. And the proceeds of that book were going to a tour guide that he had in Ethiopia, Jonas. And he felt by sending the profits of his book to this one individual, it would expand in circles like ripples. And he was living his book, so to speak. So I said, I can invest too. So I bought the book. I was interested in the book anyway, but you know, that's that going forward. But Stubborn Attachments is, I think, for me, the theme of the week, the theme going forward. I was moved by Dennis Rader and his talk on immigration. So at the conclusion of that, I said, I'm going to go to Casa Alba Melanie and volunteer, since he said you could have English-speaking volunteers. So I went and I filled out the application. But I talked to Pilar and mentioned that I was very impressed with a program they had, which was started by a young East cross country runner. Now, my children were East cross country runners as well. And she was, you know, this conversation now started to take on a personal nature. And in a sense, we were sharing that attachment. And while I, you know, gave the money in support of that program, it was the moment of connection, of pride in our children, that was, for me, the important moment.
Beautiful. Thanks, Kathy. One of the amazing things about this experiment is the joy that I have seen that it brought. I spoke with several of the recipients as they were leaving church on Sunday, and each one of them had a great big smile on their face. Oh, I already know what I'm going to do. They were excited about being able to be kind. They were excited about being able to pass on their gift, to help someone else. The reality is that this is the wisdom of the gospel, that this is the core of Jesus' wisdom. The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Die unto yourself as the center of your concern, and rather use your resources to help those in need. Friends, all month at the beginning of our worship service, you've been hearing testimonies that have been organized by our stewardship ministry about what this church means in the lives of your fellow members. We've been talking about giving from the heart to the church of our heart. The reality is that every single day, week in and week out, in large and small ways, this church lives the gospel. Every day, this church helps real people to understand that they are God's beloved. Every day, this church reaches out to people to let them know that they and their wholeness matter more than systems, more than glory, more than power. And your financial gifts are what empower us to do that. In order for us to be on a stable financial footing for the next several years, we're going to need an increase in our giving. And so we're asking households to contemplate increasing their pledge by 10%. We know that not everyone will be able to do that. We understand that. But we're hoping that some might even be able to find a way to do even more, knowing that others are unable. Friends, we have been graced, and we know that every good gift comes from God. My prayer this week is that we can all immerse ourselves in Jesus' reality, that the true glory in life is not found in power and prestige, but in serving one another, in loving our neighbor, just as Christ has loved us. Thanks be to God.